Hi, I'm Otto. Welcome to Erin and Sarah's podcast.
Okay, today's episode is, let me guess, Sarah, you're going to tell us it's your favorite episode.
Honestly, it's one of my favorites.
No, it really is a great episode, though. We have Dana Bash, not to be confused with Dana Bash. Her name is Dana. Even though it's spelled D-A-N-A, it is Dana. She's special and unique, so don't come for her about how to say her name. She is also CNN's chief political correspondent and the co-anchor of State of the Union. I mean, I don't know how he got her.
Instantly surprised at the caliber of women we have on this podcast. Like, I don't understand. Why does anyone want to talk to us?
I mean, maybe they haven't seen our Instagrams.
Maybe that's, but it's pretty shocking the caliber of women that we are getting to talk to. You took it a little political, which I didn't like. I try to keep things neutral, very Switzerland.
I'm so sorry for getting political with the chief political correspondent of CNN. You know what I was doing? I was testing her knowledge. Okay.
Oh, right. You wanted to see if she actually understood this.
How much do you really know what's going on? You know what I mean?
Well, that's a good tactic. Have guests on and then test them.
Right. Yeah,
I will say we talked about so many interesting things having nothing to do with politics. I mean, this is a woman on a mission here. We talked about her mentors. We talked about fertility and the timing. We talked about co-parenting. She co-parents with
John King.
John King.
The guy who points on the map of which state is voting which way, and he seems to be very good at math.
Right. Well, that's how people like you would recognize him, because you watch him when he's, you know, doing the election. But he is a longtime CNN anchor. He recently just came out and you know, was really amazing. He came out and told the world that he has MS, which was a really big deal. Anyways, the point is, this isn't about him. But the other thing that I loved, which is very rare, is how she is a female who really supports females. And we say, like, a lot of people, women say they do, but she really does. And she really mentors the younger female anchors. And we talk about that. She was very open.
You could learn a lot from her instead of you always being like, did you see that girl? She was very pretty. Like, let's, you know, make sure she's not hired. Yeah. Let's make sure she's not hired. You know,
that you're not as involved as Dana.
No, you're not.
No,
you're not. Okay. Let's let everybody listen.
Hi, this is so much fun.
I'm going to just say, this is a little intimidating.
I was just going to say, please don't use your Elizabeth Holmes voice.
Okay.
So when Sarah talks to someone she thinks is really smart and intimidating, she's like, hello, welcome to the show. We've been waiting for you. I'm like, Sarah, just be yourself. Just be your dumbass self. Dana will appreciate it.
No Sarah knows here.
Okay. Yeah, please.
All right, I'm going to try to be myself. No, but it's very intimidating because Erin and I, we are on episode 26 of this podcast. We really don't know what we're doing. And so when you speak to somebody who is, you know, interviewing world leaders for a living, it's a little intimidating.
Well, I would say that Trump has really given us an upper hand here, because once you've talked to someone like him and he's running the free world, you know, we should be fine.
Okay, wait, so I always knew Dana, you as Dana Bash. So you're Dana Bash, but you're Dana Bash.
It's Dana, like banana. And now, believe me, my parents, I just wish they called me either Dana or something else.
I really got a kick out of Kristen Wiig playing you on SNL and saying, it's Dana Bash for some reason.
We don't really know why. Actually, I do know why, but I won't bore you with it.
No, we want to know why. Tell us.
So my grandfather was David. I was the firstborn. He died when my dad was six. So they wanted a D because we're Jewish and that's what we do. And so my mom went to like elementary school with somebody named Dana, and she always liked the name. So they named me Dana. Fast forward to like when I was 15 years old, my grandparents are moving. We go into their basement. We find one of her yearbooks, and it's D-A-N-N-A. It was like, thanks, mom.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a conversation starter, though.
It is. And I just want to say for the, because we don't have a visual component here. I mean, we post clips, but Dana is chic as hell.
She's wearing leather.
She is in leather.
You know, you are an extremely visible woman in politics. You take on and go head to head with some of the, you know, greatest leaders, some of the not so great leaders. And you do it with poise. And I find you to be someone who has a very commanding presence, but also feels feminine and like soft and approachable in a way that is not off-putting, right? It's hard as women to come up in a man's world. I really want to understand from you. We want to kind of take the audience to how you got to where you are. I want to understand how you got to this place where you are able to have these tense discussions and hold your own without coming across, you know, as women, we have to be really careful coming across angry, aggressive, entitled, spoiled, like we're a know-it-all. Like we have to be so careful riding the lines. And you just seem to do it very well. Maybe you can share a little bit about how you grew up in a family of journalists and around journalism and kind of how it brought you here. Like, were you the kid that was rebellious and didn't want to do that? Or were you the kid that's like, that's all you knew?
No, I was so rebellious. My father, who you alluded to this, he worked for ABC News for 41 years. He was a producer and he was on the team that started Good Morning America and then Nightline. And then, I mean, he kind of did it all. And I hated what he did in some ways, particularly when I was really young, because like you said, all kids want to do is have, when they're really little, have their parents around. And he had a job where his /our schedule was not our own. So when the Pope died, and I remember this vividly, a Pope died, we were at the beach on a vacation with a couple other families. We had to go home because my dad had to go to work. He worked early mornings, GMA, late at night, Nightline. And so,
which means you're up at like 3 in the morning, right?
Yeah. I was like, your job sucks. I will never do that. I want to do something that is very, very rigid and predictable. And then I ended up going to college here in Washington, where I am right now.
Now, let me just jump in and ask, was your family and was your dad, did you come from a liberal family, a conservative family? Like, where did they fall?
You're not going to believe me, but I swear to God, particularly my dad, my mom is liberal. Even though she studied and she trained as a journalist, they both went to Northwestern, to Medill. She didn't practice. She didn't work in journalism for most of my life. My dad did. And I genuinely did not know what his politics were.
Wow.
And I didn't know who he voted for.
Wow.
I really had no idea, because it was just not a thing. That was just what journalists did.
It was also less polarizing back then, right? I mean, being a Republican and a Democrat didn't mean the same thing as it means today.
Very, very true. I'm an old school journalist, but a lot of people are. So I didn't know. I really didn't. And but I knew I didn't want to do what he did. My dad jokes that I graduated from high school really not knowing that there were three branches of government. And I actually think he might be right. I was a partier.
Sarah,
give us the three branches of government.
You want me to do it or you?
Wait,
want to do it?
I want Sarah to do it. I know there's judicial.
Yes.
Yes. There's executive.
Yes.
Aaron, like, Googled this, right?
No,
before.
I didn't.
Aaron,
I
just, like, listened to the daily.
No,
this
I just remember. I remember learning it in my politics class. Okay. Please? Executive, judicial, and.
Do you want me to give you a hint?
Yeah.
It's where they work in the Capitol.
In like the Senate?
Yep. That's part of it. The legislative branch.
Legislative. Yeah. Got it. Okay. All right. Well, we failed that. Okay. Continue.
You guys are too young for Schoolhouse Rock. Did you know Schoolhouse Rock? I'm just a bill. I'm only a bill. I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
Honestly,
I've never felt more unintelligent in my life.
We're only 18. No, we don't know things like that.
Early 20s, Dana.
I'm the chief political correspondent, excuse me, for CNN. I just got through telling you that my father was convinced, and I'm sure he was right, that I graduated from high school not knowing there were three people.
But when you were growing up, were you really like paying attention? Because of course you associated your dad's job with not being with him, right? Your dad's job symbolized like not abandonment, but it symbolized something more for you. Yeah. But were you paying attention more than... Not really.
When I was younger, I was, because Nightline started and it was the hostage crisis in Iran. And so I knew that that was a big thing. We were living in the DC area at the time. So you kind of learn about this stuff through osmosis. But then he was transferred to New York. We lived in New Jersey and I didn't have a clue what was happening.
Did he come home and he really left it at the office and it was a different environment once he walked in the door?
No, I think they probably did. I was just too busy, you know, as a teenager in my own shit and not caring about them and too worried about like how much hairspray I have in my hair or if my eyeliner was blue enough.
Fair enough. So this is really interesting and important for our listeners, because a lot of women tune in and listen to us and they're always, you know, writing us that they're having sort of a crisis of faith about their life. They're at a crossroads. They're scared to transition out of something. They're scared to end a relationship. They're scared of the unknown. They're scared of what do I do next? Or am I behind because I don't know who I am yet, or I don't know what I want, or I don't know if this is my right person, or I don't know if this is my right career path. And there's a lot of people out there, but we have a large female audience that are looking for strong, empowered, confident women to kind of share those moments in their own life when they didn't know what they were going to do, or they did take a huge leap of faith into the unknown. And so you admitting, you know, that you didn't have the slightest clue of where you were headed or what you were doing, like, you know, talk more about that, because it's really helpful for other women to feel like they could go easy on themselves for having that same experience.
Oh my God, but we're so hard on ourselves. It's part of having estrogen. I really think that's just the way it is. It also, I believe it makes us the dominant gender.
I appreciate you not being neutral about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're really, you know, I mean, like you guys were talking about reading or watching something that I did to prepare for this podcast. And I mean, I already knew a lot about you two, but then I went back and looked, you know, did my homework. That's so female.
Yeah.
Do you think men do that?
Do you think men don't do that? Do men not prepare, or like—
What? Because they think that they've got it. They're like, I can do this because I'm a man and I have testosterone. I mean, I'm sure some do. I know some do, but it's a very female thing. And I own that. I love that because I want to be engaged. And this actually connects to one of the questions you guys were asking earlier about, my interview style and having moments in those interviews. And it's all of the same thing from my point of view. And I'm actually kind of having this realization as I'm talking to you. I feel like this is a therapy session, but it's listening and it's knowing what the person could potentially say, because I did their homework, and trying to get them to take it a step further or take it in a different direction, and understanding who they are to help the audience find out what they want and why what they're saying matters. And, you know, men do that too, but I feel like it's one of the many, many reasons it's so great to have women in these positions, because it's just a different feel. And I take that, you know, femininity, that the part of that, really seriously. And, you know, there were times, this is more of the superficial than the how we approach things, but you know, like when I first started, I cut my hair and I wore my suits, and then I realized like the culture changed, but I don't have to do that. I can be me.
You're like, I want to wear leather. Head to toe leather.
You know, that's what we don't realize, is that, you know, you can shapeshift to be what you see everybody else doing, who is surviving and who is, you know, jumping ahead. You can do that. But then when you decide to be yourself and take a different route, it's so infectious. And all of a sudden, everybody takes notice of the confidence behind that decision. And then all of a sudden, they want to start mimicking you. That's the truth. Like, if you be Dana Bash better than anybody, that is going to get it more attention than you mimicking what somebody else is doing.
And for the women out there, I will say that I'm older than you two. And I did not have this confidence when I was your age, and certainly younger. I didn't. And for me, experience helped give me that confidence.
I was just going to ask you, where do you get the confidence?
Give me that confidence. I know people who are, could be my children who I work with, who are on the air, I mean, age-wise, and they have innate confidence that I didn't have when I was younger. So everybody's different. And everybody finds their voice, finds their comfort zone, finds their confidence in different ways.
No, I was just going to say.
It's great. I literally, this is how our interview, I go, and about to say something and then she jumps in. Yes. What would you like to say?
All I was going to say is that when it comes to confidence, that my husband and I joke a lot about when we're in an argument. And if one person like stumbles on a word, you essentially lose all ground. You know, if you go to say like, you know, leaving and showing and all of a sudden you say sheaving, you know, because you're like talking too fast and your whole argument is just completely done. You've lost that argument. And so I was thinking when I was watching clips of you, you know, when you're going head to head with people who are really challenging you, not you particularly, but, you know, and everybody who's in your field, really pushing back and challenging you in real time. And there's so much pressure and there's a camera on you and you're like being put on the spotlight, that one slip up or letting that person see that they got you or they cornered you, or it takes all your power away, right? Like, how did you get to the place you're at today where you can stay calm, cool, and collected? Like, I have a blushing problem, so I would never survive your job, because the minute someone had me in a corner, I would be like fuchsia. And I would be losing my job and my argument. So like, how do you handle yourself in those moments where someone, and I only bring up Trump not to be polarizing in this conversation or to make you say anything about him, even though I hate him and I want to make that clear. But it's someone who's going to like take a stab that is like unexpected to make you feel dumb or look stupid, right? Like, how do you handle those moments?
For me personally, it is going back to the preparation. And on State of the Union, which I'm a co-host of, and in other venues, I have a lot of what we call backup and pushback in our world. And I have papers on the desk where, because I know where they're going to go and where they're not going to go, or perhaps where they're going to try to get me or be in denial or avoid, I try to prepare. And I have like, if this, then this, if that, then this. It doesn't always work because sometimes they'll say something that is so completely surprising that I'm not prepared. But I feel, generally speaking, if I know enough about the subject matter of where we are right now in the world or in the news environment, and B, what their tendency is, it's to be prepared and then just to go with it. And then going back to the listening thing. And sometimes if it's me pushing to get an answer, I'll push once, don't get anything, push again, don't get anything, a third time. And then it's like, you think about the viewer, like, do I really want to see her badger this person when you know you're not going to get an answer? And at that point, the non-answer speaks for itself, and then you move on.
You're really operating in a lane that is so foreign to us. I mean, live TV is so its own animal. And a lot of like, listen, a lot of what Aaron and I do, we're operating on instincts half of the time. I can't even fathom doing what you do. I mean, it is a skill set that not many people have access to.
When I'm in the studio, I feel like for the most part, I am walking on a tightrope, but I have a net, and the net is the team in the control room, and who, you know, right now the EP of State of the Union is Abigail Crutchfield, and she was my producer on the road during 2016, speaking of Trump. So we kind of speak each other's language, and same with Rachel Streitfeld, who's, I'm just throwing these names out, but these are strong women, by the way, who are the producers of the show, who can gently, quickly get in my ear and be like, okay, move on, or, you know, don't forget to press on this, or just let me go. A lot of times they're just quiet and let me go because I'm kind of in the zone and feeling it out. But my point in telling you that is that we have nets, and those are our colleagues in the control room. When I'm in the field and I'm doing an interview, there's no one in my ear, there's no one anything. And that's the whole, I'm on my own and I'm just doing
right. Well, you're prepared when you're in the field, right? Yeah. And you don't have the backbone of a teleprompter or whatever. You are prepared, just like how we are for this interview.
Exactly.
Yes. But it's interesting. Like, I asked a friend of mine who I really respect. She is like a very seasoned journalist and all the things. And
name,
I said, I'm not going to give a name.
Names.
Oh, I know. I want to know.
But right? She.
Sarah, why be so secretive?
No, but I asked her, I was like, what is your advice? I was like, I think interviewing is a skill that you really have to work at. It is not easy. You can be a great conversationalist, but that doesn't make you a good interviewer. And she said, just listen. When you don't, yes. When you're sitting here thinking about what am I going to say next? What am I going to say next to sound this or to come across this way? You are not listening. You are really able to have an authentic, flowing conversation when you listen. But listening is really hard. It's really hard.
It's got to be extra hard when you're on live television.
Yeah, I can't even fathom.
And you know you're about to be on the spot for a good response.
And if you sound like an idiot or you, I mean, it's like.
It is hard, but some of my best interviews, whoever gave you that advice is genius, because some of my best interviews have been.
It was Oprah. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Continue.
You can give her my number and you can just. Got it. But when I throw out 50 to 90% of what I had planned, and the reason it turns out so good is because I just follow the interview. I mean, I get lucky sometimes and they say something that's newsworthy and I just keep going on that and follow up on that. But it's because we have to listen, and that's really the key.
I feel like we are basically like the new founders of Athletic Greens.
I just patiently wait for that phone call where I find out we have equity in the company.
We don't have equity. You know what we have? We have
a healthy body.
We have interest in our own health and wellness.
That's yeah. Athletic Greens is a complete game changer. I don't know about you guys, but I take a shitload of vitamins. I just do. If I don't, I feel like crap. I am, what's the word?
Toxic? A toxic person?
No. When you're deficient. I'm deficient in many areas and I just need a lot. And I'm not the healthiest eater. You know, I'm not like eating my broccoli once a day. I just don't do that.
No, you're a cheese enchilada, breakfast, lunch, and dinner kind of person.
Yeah. I just might listen. My diet isn't great. So I have to supplement with things that are great. So that's why I personally love Athletic Greens.
You should start your day with a scoop of their best-selling product, AG1, which, by the way, contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, including a multivitamin, a multimineral, probiotic, green superfood blend, and more in a convenient daily serving. That is one scoop in a cup of water, and you're done. You have all of that.
First thing in the morning, scoop in the water. I do orange juice. Stir it on up, guzzle it down. You're done. I mean, you know, you still should be healthy. But like for me, it's like I just feel good the rest of the day.
So join the movement of athletes, lifeleets, moms, dads, rookies, first timers, and everyone in between taking ownership of their daily health and focus on the nutritional products that they really need in the simplest manner possible. That's Essentialist Nutrition. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/foster today. That is athleticgreens.com/foster to take control of your health and give AG1 a try. Here's what I'm going to say about Jenny Kane and her home collection. All these like tchotchkes and bohemian and like colorful, wild, like no. That's not in anymore. So if you guys are living in that right now, look around. You need a little bit of neutrals in your life. Okay. The greatest way to set your home apart and to seem adult and mature is to have a house that has neutrals. Sarah, you are guilty of a lot of different mixing and matching patterns. You got the ugliest pills I've ever had. Just Sarah can't decide what her aesthetic is. Jenny Kane's aesthetic from her home collection is just so elevated. You literally can't get anything that would embarrass you in front of your family or friends. They have pieces that are starting at $25 and they have great additions to your dining room and your kitchen. They have they have amazing cashmere throws. They have an amazing Tahoe cashmere throw and the alpaca basket weave throw I have on my guest room bed. People come in and they're like, are you rich? Is this beautiful?
What I love about Jenny Kane, honestly, is that she has pieces that can just instantly make you feel like you completely redid the room when truly it's like one piece.
Everything she does is made with exceptional quality and integrity and timeless design. Timeless is very important, you guys. If you're designing your house with pieces that are timeful and not timeless.
I think timeful is a word.
I know, but you understand what I mean when I say
it. I know, but it's just, we can't be, we are now, this is a podcast that people actually listen to. So our, like our verbiage has to be correct.
Well, what if I go viral and I make timeful a word?
Yeah. Viral in a bad way.
Okay. Don't be timeful, be timeless. Okay. These are the pieces that you will love coming home to. Get your forever pieces at jennykane.com. Get 15% off your first order when you use the code FOSTER at checkout. That is 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code FOSTER.
So at what point, and I'm just going off the rails, we have a whole like thing, but I haven't even looked at it. At what point-
You're listening.
I'm listening.
We're just in the zone.
We're in the zone with you. At what point, like I really know that there's so much to your story and I know we're skipping around a lot, but at what point did you just lean in and go, okay, like
it's- in a Sheryl Sandberg way?
Like, no, like it's in my blood. I'm good at this.
Oh yeah, let's circle back. When did you go against your rebellious nature and decide that you actually would get into the family biz?
Yeah.
I was in college here in Washington and it was definitely kind of a eureka moment. I was like, you know what? F it. I'm just gonna, can I say yeah, the F word?
You can say fuck it.
Okay, so fuck it. I'm just gonna stop fighting my DNA. And it was when I realized that like a teacher came to me and said, you should be a tutor in the writing center. And that I really liked writing. And then I did an internship for CBS News here in Washington just to see if I liked it. And of course I loved it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then I applied to and got into this program. I went to the George Washington University. And I got into the political communication department. And I just, it was like I was on a treadmill and it was just going and I was just going with it.
But as a kid, when you're home, you're obviously having conversations with your parents about what you want to do. What do you want to be? It's a normal question, right? Like I talk to my kids all the time.
I don't know. Maybe I wanted to be a lawyer. I thought maybe I wanted to go in to be a publicist, but that's definitely communications. I mean, it's related. It's kind of all the same. But I really didn't know for sure. I got the political bug in school here in Washington. And I loved my internships in TV news. And then I did some internships in politics, more like volunteer work on Capitol Hill in the Clinton White House. I had a brief sort of volunteer stint in the press office. And so I wasn't sure kind of which side I wanted to go. And then I realized, again, it's probably my DNA, but it's also where my interest is. I was less advocate and more voyeur. I was really more interested in what all sides of the debate thought and how they were making their arguments than being an activist for one side. It's just, maybe it's because I grew up not having any clue how my parents voted.
Well, on that subject, I really want to know, so when you were growing up and your dad was a journalist, it was much more normal at that time for everyone to be neutral and even networks to be neutral, right? Everyone had, like, you kind of knew, if you were really in the know, you knew like that this is owned by a conservative person or this is run by, you know, a liberal person. But in general, everyone had to stay really neutral. And that has changed a lot. And now it's much more common to hear Anderson Cooper tell you his real thoughts about something. And you kind of know where everyone falls. You know, if you're on Fox, you lean one way. You know, if you're on CNN, you lean another way. And opinions are much stronger now and much more clear. You were, you know, notoriously said that the first presidential debate with Trump and Biden was a shit show, which really showed like you said what we were all thinking. Yeah, you're feisty. Yeah. I think Jake Tepper had just said that it was a hot mess also.
This is on my...
Oh, that's really funny. Okay, Dana has a sign on her desk that says, welcome to the shit show, which is really funny. So politics are much more polarized now. I really struggle having neutral conversations. I have a very hard time talking to someone who's a Trump supporter or even really Republican at all these days, just because it means something so different. And I really want to understand from you, like, well, how you feel about the change in polarized politics now, and how you, if you try to stay neutral or if you kind of lean in because you're human. And then finally, kind of, I used to have CNN on all the time. Like, that was my background TV. Mm-hmm. I don't put the news on anymore because it's so hard for me to watch, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so hard for me to absorb where we're at right now. And I watch news and I get angry. Like, I feel so mad about what's happening, how ridiculous it all appears. Not your job, obviously, and you understand how I mean, but where the world is at. And I just have a hard time. It depresses me. I feel like we're lost. Like, I don't know how to come back from it. And so I just want to hear from you kind of how you feel about all that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel kind of the same way, to be honest. And just to go back to the beginning of your question, it's a really good one because we almost don't remember as a society, and you guys didn't even have this as your experience. And by this, I mean, when I was growing up and my dad was in this business, there were the three networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. You watched at 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night, and you watched the morning and you read the newspaper, and that was it. There was no internet. There was no cable TV. There was radio. There was like conservative radio and liberal radio, but it was not as commonplace. And you had to seek out publications from the left and the right to get the magazine sent to you and so forth. It was truly just the facts, ma'am. It really was. And then the moments when that didn't happen were like, oh my gosh, like famously when Walter Cronkite turned on the Vietnam War and said, this is ridiculous. And LBJ said, looked at the TV and looked at his people and said, when you've lost Cronkite, you've lost the nation. That's how rare it was.
Do you think it's good that he did that?
Yes, I do. I do.
Because I think in certain instances, you do have to speak out. You're still an American. You're still part of the country that's potentially falling apart.
Right. And exactly. And what the sort of through line between that and what we do, and well, just speak for myself, what I try to do at CNN, and even going back in time before that, the McCarthy era, McCarthyism, and what Edward R. Murrow, I just want to say for the record, I am in no way putting myself in the Edward R. Murrow category, but he is definitely a North Star for journalists. And that was him calling out McCarthyism. And so what I was going to say is the through line for all of that is our job as journalists is to get truth out and to have fact-based conversations. And when you have a committee and a senator in Eugene McCarthy, who was going after people where you are for the most part in Hollywood and ruining their careers for being quote unquote, you know, communist.
It's kind of early cancel culture, right? It's like even at the sniff of someone saying you're potentially a communist, your whole career was over.
That's so insightful. That's exactly right. Totally different topic on Vietnam. The government was lying to America about the numbers and about people being killed in combat who were forced to go. It was a draft. It was not a volunteer army or military. To, again, very different topic, but today's day and age where we as journalists feel not just compelled, but it is a necessity to go and say, what you just heard from the then president is not true. He didn't win the election in 2020. He didn't, you know, name your topic. And when I first started having to do that on television during the Trump era, I physically felt sick to my stomach because that's just not something I was used to having to do. Yes, we call up facts and reality checks and all of that, but to have to go on television, live television, after an event from the White House, from the President of the United States, and to say, what you just heard from the president, from the leader of the free world, is not factually true. It was necessary, but like, not fun.
The country would say, you're wrong, because it's opinion.
Because he primed them to do that.
It's opinion-based politics, because you'll have Tucker Carlson on the other network saying the opposite of what you're saying. And that's where the American people get so confused, because like I get into arguments with people about politics all the time, and I will state, you know, a fact that I read or I learned on the news, and that person will just say, you're just straight up wrong. What you're hearing is fake news.
Yeah. And that was all done. It was set up by Donald Trump. Donald Trump created a situation where he set us up, us, the quote unquote MSM, mainstream media, particularly CNN, as fake news. And so that when the time came for us to have to push back on really important lies, like the big lie that is eroding democracy, he had already primed the pump. Like he'd already convinced the people who are listening to him not to listen to us. And it is, and I don't like to sound preachy, but it is really dangerous. I actually worked on a project that's premiering on CNN about voting rights. And it is, I went to Texas and to Georgia and to Arizona and talked to Democrats and Republicans. But the most interesting conversations I had were Republican legislators who voted for and supported changing the laws that decide how voters have access to the ballot box, but also how and who counts the votes and decides what is and isn't a certified vote in each state. And so much of those changes are done because their base, the Trump base, are demanding it because they believe him that there was widespread fraud in 2020. And so all of this is...
Didn't the law change so that now it is actually Republican legislators who will be counting the votes?
Well, that's exactly in Georgia. How is that legal though? You guys got this. You guys know more about this than most people. I mean, that's remarkable that because yes, you're exactly right. Georgia, it's one of the states that I really try to shine a spotlight on in this documentary is, this guy, Brad Raffensperger, who is still the Secretary of State. So he was in charge of certifying the vote. He was the one who took that famous, infamous call from Donald Trump saying, please find me 11,000 blah, blah, blah votes.
Find me the votes.
What the legislature in Georgia did.
He pushed back.
So the legislature, Republican legislature, took the power that he had to push back against the president, took that power away from him and gave it to themselves.
I know we're just getting into like a debate now about all this stuff, but how is Biden not stopping this from happening?
Good question. The way that he can stop it is federal legislation, is by passing a law that there are lots of different ways that they can do it, but passing something on a federal level that negates these changes on the statewide level. The reason he hasn't done it is because there are 50 votes in the United States Senate, 50 Democratic votes, and there's the filibuster. And so...
Honestly, I don't know what a filibuster is.
Okay, so you want me to explain it?
Yes, please.
So a filibuster is... It's actually a misnomer because it means different things at different times. But generally speaking, what it means in practical terms is that for most pieces of legislation... you need 60 votes to pass it. And the reason is because any one senator can block it unless you have 60 votes to overcome it. This is not in the Constitution. This is not in any constitutional amendment. These are just the rules of the road in the Senate, which is why you have so many, at this point in time, so many Democratic activists, liberal activists saying, enough already. Change the rules so that we can pass legislation like voting rights legislation, because if not, there are going to be a lot of people who are disenfranchised in states that really, well, any voter that's disenfranchised, that's undemocratic, small d. And if you don't do that, then you're putting voters at a disadvantage, particularly in key swing states like Georgia, and which changed everything. Without Georgia, you wouldn't have a Democratic, well, it would be harder to have a Democratic president. But more importantly, Georgia elected two Democratic senators, which is the reason why Democrats are in charge mathematically.
Do we ever get back to the way that politics are supposed to be. Because I feel like, you know, we can't really come back from this. I mean, obviously we'll shift and evolve and change, but I don't think we can unsee what we've seen. Like, now that everyone's opinions are out there, now that the country's so divided, now that you can freely say things that are untrue on the internet or on the news or in an interview or anything, and just as long as you believe it's true and you say it's true, then you're fine. Now that we can contest a legal election and pretend like it was illegal, like, in some ways, I wonder if something good is happening, where we've gone so far away from each other, it's become so performative and so ridiculous that maybe we actually no longer identify as Republican or Democrat. Like, I'm a Democrat, but I don't really identify with Democrat values so much anymore. Like, I don't identify with the extreme left anymore. I definitely don't identify with being a Republican in almost every way socially. So is there a world where we all kind of like find our way somewhere in the middle? Is it sort of all blowing up in a way that becomes better?
I hope so. And, you know, look, what you just described, where you stand on politics, is where a lot of people stand. They're just not the loudest. They're just not on Twitter. They're not the, you know, they're busy with their lives. They're not screaming and yelling on either side. And so the challenge is for politicians is to reach out to those people and get those people like you to vote. My thing, and this is from covering Congress for a very long time and talking to a lot of House members, and this is becoming a big issue this year because we're in a census year, which means that all of the states are redrawing their congressional maps. And where I'm going with this is the reason, and forgive me, but I'm kind of obsessed with this. The fundamental reason why the House of Representatives in particular is so divided is because of their districts are drawn in a way that it gerrymandered. And by that, what I mean by that is there's a district in pick your state, and it is drawn in a way that it is only Democratic or it is only Republican. So what does that mean? That means that if you're a Democrat representing that district, and you're challenged politically, if you have a challenger, the challenger that's going to matter the most is in a primary. So let's say you're a moderate Democrat who believes everything that you said that you believe. That is anathema to the activists in your district. So they will challenge you and they will have the votes possibly to beat you. And so then the impetus is to go to the extremes, is basically the way of saying it. The swing districts, where you could have a moderate Republican, you could have a moderate Democrat, the impetus is to go to the middle and to appeal to the kind of voter that you are. There's so many districts that were drawn by Democratic and Republican legislatures across the country that are so heavily either Democratic or Republican, they are forced, if they want to stay in office, to appeal to the extremes of both parties. And so that combined with the media that you're talking about is what's making the country just even more polarized. Mm-hmm.
This turned very political. I was not. Erin is very outspoken.
I so didn't expect to have this conversation.
The World's First podcast is supported by First Republic Bank, with a best-in-class banking app that allows you to bank anywhere, anytime, and a dedicated personal banker when you need one-on-one service. First Republic is uniquely positioned to offer the best of both worlds.
With this combination of personal attention and convenience, it is no wonder that First Republic Bank has a client satisfaction rating 2 times the industry average. So whether you're opening a personal line of credit or planning for your retirement, you can count on First Republic to be there for you every step of the way.
Visit firstrepublic.com today to learn more. That's firstrepublic.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. I love money. So love this.
Don't go off script. Okay. KiwiCo.
I am constantly looking for things to get my kids to distract them from the iPad.
Yeah. It's
like,
mommy wants to be on her phone. So be, please be busy as possible.
Mommy wants you to be busy, but she wants you to be busy where you're actually like doing something positive and not rotting your brain, which is why we love KiwiCo.
Yes, because KiwiCo is a one-stop gift shop for kids of every interest and age and has very specific interests, right? They're like very cool categories. You can have like science-based ones or like adventure. They have like camping ones. And they're always like, you know, they help kids discover the mechanics behind everyday objects. They like learn the science of cooking or exploring new cultures and practicing new art and design techniques, all through these like very fun hands-on projects.
You give them these boxes, they're entertained for like hours and they're actually doing something that is good for them. But like, I don't know necessarily like Josie, she's five. Like she just said to me, she loves science. Like, hello, there you go. Like this is something that is absolutely perfect for her.
Also, if I can just jump in here for a second. They have a subscription. And so it's actually a really great gift to get somebody else. So if there's somebody who has a child in their life that you love, that you want to help give a great gift to, then you can do a subscription for a year. And then they have all of these amazing hands-on science, art, and geography projects delivered to their door every month, which is very cool.
And there's no commitment. You can pause or you can cancel anytime. I just love it. It's giving you like the opportunity to discover like maybe a skill that you have that you didn't know you had, right?
So this holiday season, give the gift of a fun hands-on holiday experience with KiwiCo. Get 50% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line with the code FOSTER at KiwiCo.com. That is 50% off your first month at KiwiCo.com, promo code FOSTER.
You talk a lot about how you are not competitive with the women that you work with, who are essentially your competitors, right? There's always like that, like everyone's vying for the same positions on TV and it's a cutthroat business. And so I want you to talk about, because this is something that comes up for us a lot. You know, we had a friendship expert on that was a really popular episode for us. A woman who literally coaches people and women on female friendships, how to be a better friend, how to ask for what you need, how to not compete with other women, but instead empower them. And it's something that our listeners were really interested in. And it feels like you take a very different approach to embracing and empowering the women around you instead of, you know, poisoning their water when they're not looking.
Yeah.
So talk to us about that.
I really try to. And let me just say off the bat that I feel like I'm of the generation that has the luxury to do that. I'm not saying that there isn't competition. I'm not saying that that isn't an environment that we're in. I mean, of course we are. No matter what industry you're in, that's just a reality. But in this particular industry, when my mom briefly was working at the local ABC affiliate station in Chicago, she got the job because there was a quota. And so she filled like the woman spot and that was it. And so if another woman wanted the woman spot, they were really, truly competitive. And that doesn't exist anymore. There are lots of women, not enough women in sort of powerful positions across the industry. I'm not talking about where I work, but across the industry, but it's so much better. And because I benefit from people in my mother's generation, some of whom I actually get to work with a little bit younger here, I have seen the benefit of just of the sisterhood and I understand how lucky I am that so many people fought for rights ahead of me. And I also understand that in this business, particularly if you're working and there are different expectations and different perceptions is a better word than expectations of women. It's just a fact that hasn't changed. And we want to have families. Then that adds a whole nother layer of the need for a support system.
What were the lessons that your mom taught you in your household, or how did you hear her speaking about other women? Because that's how we learn, right? You hear your mom talking shit about women behind their back and cutting them down and being competitive, then that's how you talk. So is this something that was passed down to you directly from your mom? Like, how did you hear her talking, or what advice did she give you about another girl that you think is pretty at work, and what if she gets the job, or this girl who the boss seems to really like? Like, what were those lessons?
You know, I don't remember having a specific conversation with her, but my mother is like such a good person, such a good-hearted person. My friends in high school used to say like that people that in the morning she got up and like Snow White, like the birds brought her robe, and the, you know, the little chipmunk brought her coffee. I mean, that's probably why she didn't last very long in my business at that time in the late 60s. So I probably just learned by osmosis from the way that she is my guess. And same with my dad. I mean, it's pretty competitive, and it certainly was even then for men too, but we're just in talking about women. So I learned probably by watching my mom, but I also feel like I learned from the women who came ahead of me in my workplace. Gloria Borger, who had to fight tooth and nail. Candy Crowley, who left CNN several years ago, who got pregnant and was afraid to tell people at work because when you got pregnant and you worked in TV news, you were done. You couldn't be pregnant in the newsroom. It just wasn't a thing.
So sad. It is crazy. Aaron and I talk a lot about, you know, some of our most notable, disheartening experiences growing up, you know, in the entertainment industry, and then trying to make it in the fields that we are in, have some of our, you know, most demoralizing experiences have been with women. Like the women that you would think would champion you, or the women who you would think would like offer to mentor you, or it's really been the women that have left like the most. Like,
and don't get me wrong, I have had experiences like that, or I've heard of experiences like really high profile, really it would blow your mind experiences from female colleagues who had those. And it is, it's so true.
Those hurt way more than the dudes. That like then like the men who kind of like make you feel like an idiot or make a comment, or it's like, whatever. It's annoying in the moment, but it doesn't stick the way that it sticks when it's from a woman.
Madeleine Albright said, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women.
Oh, I love that.
I know, I remember that quote.
I love that. But like, listening to you talk about some of the wonderful, you know, younger women that you work with, like the way that you speak about them and the way that you lift them up and the way that, I mean, I would imagine that it's sort of like shaped who they are in this business. And it feels so real when you're talking about it. I mean, it really does. Like you feel it. You feel how deeply you want them to win.
I'm not so sure how much of an impact it has had on them, but it has on me, because I do, you're right. I really do feel it. And, and I genuinely enjoy sending a text to somebody who I know like worked really hard on a piece or on an interview, or I know is feeling that day because they're just trying to find their way. I was there. I know that feeling. I am that person, still am that person. So to get a little at a girl, or, you know, I'm with you, sister, or whatever it is. I know how much it helps me, and when I'm having a shitty day, it probably helps you guys too. And it's
you really set the tone. Like you could have a younger woman come in, new to the job, and maybe she's ready to like be competitive. She's ready to like, you know, see you as her enemy, or the person that she's going to have to like push out of your spot to take her own.
She binge watched the morning show the night before.
Yeah. Do you try to set the tone by sort of not creating any space for that energy? Like, how do you handle it if there is a younger girl coming in that's like, you know, has like that bitchy energy she's walking in the room with? Do you just sort of neutralize it?
I do. I never really articulated it that way or thought it through that way. But that is probably one of the byproducts of the way that I naturally operate with people. And I also, I'm a veteran of CNN. I've been here for 28 years. I've literally never worked anywhere
else. You're like Bob Iger of CNN.
I've been here since college.
Yeah.
And so part of it is also, and can I tell you something else? This is about, not about gender, but it's just about being a human being. I also came up learning from Wolf Blitzer, who is
love
the mentiest.
Love that Wolfie.
Love him.
Is
Wolf Blitzer single?
No, he's got the most, you would love Lynn Blitzer. If you met Lynn Blitzer, she would be your best friend. She's the coolest
Was not asking for myself.
Doesn't sound like it because she's trying to take her man.
Was not asking for myself.
I don't think she's going to want to be friends with me.
I have so many eligible girlfriends who are divorced and, you know.
Stop trying to get Wolfie divorced.
Wolf would be great.
100% off the market. But he's just, he has been a role model, like a real role model in how to act towards other human beings in this business. And there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. And for the most part, when you're doing it the right way, it's because that's who you are. That's your character. And that's his character.
Like there's a lot of support at CNN for, you know, everybody that that everyone has for each other.
So it's not like the morning show.
It is not like the morning show here for the most part. Believe me, it's a competitive business. There are moments that people have in pockets and situations. But this place is not like the morning show. But the morning show is very realistic for other experiences that I know people.
So basically Fox News, it's realistic, right?
No, I don't know about Fox. It's more networky.
So do you feel... do you feel confident in your job security? Do you feel like you don't feel that nervous thing of that energy? You feel good?
I think they may be two different feelings, right? So I think nobody in this business feels like they have job security. And if we do, they're nuts. But that's separate from having confidence. And like I said at the beginning, the confidence that I have came from a lot of experience. But are you kidding? There are days where I'm like, oh my God, I didn't get this assignment. And oh my God, what does that mean? I have those feelings all
the... Right, but you're parlaying being on air anchor and journalist. You have your own show now, correct? You have your own, what?
I'm a co-anchor with Jake Tapper.
Right, that's your show. No one's firing you from that show. That's your show.
I hope not. I hope not.
But what she's saying is like anything, you know, when you're in the entertainment business and you're an on-air person, there are things that are out of your control.
No, of
like the wind blows in the wrong direction and just like trends change. And all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, no, that's not what we want anymore. We want this.
Listen, in our world, our girlfriends who are, you know, movie stars, whatever, they sit around, they're like, I'm 43. Like the roles for the woman who, by the way, has like a 15-year-old is going to a 30-year-old. No 30-year-old should be playing anyone that has a 15-year-old kid, but like, that's how it works. The 30-year-old is married to the, you know, the 50-year-old. And I guess it's the same in your world too.
Which is why I think you're friendly with, I mean, you're probably friends with all these people, but the women in your world, in your business, who are such badasses, the Reese Witherspoons, the Kate Hudsons, the, you know, Jennifer Anistons of the world, who say, you know what, the men aren't going to put us in these roles. We're going to create our own production companies and we're going to create these roles for us. And the fact that they're so successful at it and they're making breathtaking television and movies is such a lesson.
Well, those women are thriving in their 40s and 50s in a way that they never thrived in their 20s and 30s.
It's true. They've never looked better.
Amazing.
Yeah, they've never looked better. They've never had more financial freedom. I mean, it's a good time for women in a lot of ways. Like, we have a real seat at the table. We have a seat at the table in, you know, in the finance world, in behind the scenes as producers. Reese Witherspoon, obviously, you know, just selling a production company to private equity for, I don't know, $1 billion. That is like, she's pioneering like a whole new landscape for women who are doing that.
And the fact that it's helping, that she's not only a role model, but what she is doing in her production companies is employing other women. And it's, I love it.
Kind of on that topic, since you grew up watching your dad have to be inconsistent in your life because the nature of the job, and now that is the job you ended up being in and you are a mom, how do you do it differently? How do you make the call when it's your son's big baseball game, but you know, there's a senator on life support somewhere and you got to like go report the story?
She's quitting the baseball game for a senator on life support.
All right. Something
probably not. Like, that's not I maybe if like the president's on life support.
But. And people storm the Capitol. You know, name your thing.
Oh, it's a great question. So And I was just having this conversation in the hallway with somebody before I came and talked to you. And because I think about this a lot. I was an older mom. I had my son at 40. And so, and my dad started, when I was born, my dad was 24 or something. And so he was still moving up the ladder and trying to make a name for himself. I'm still trying to move up the ladder. Don't get me wrong. But I was.
But you have 40, more clout.
I had more clout. And more safety. I don't know what the word is, but I was not running around trying to tell the world who I was. And there's definitely a downside. Like, I don't know how many rounds of IVF, or you know, we could go down that road also, but that's a downside. The upside is that I'm an older person, and you know, unless if I'm at something that is really important, or even not that important to my son, but important to me and important to my family, then that generally wins out, unless the bell is ringing really loudly at work and it's something that I just can't ignore.
By the way, it might not have if you had of had him at 29, right? I mean, 100%. Like I had my first child at 29. When I had nothing figured out, I was not doing any of the things I'm doing now. I was very lost. And it was that balance is a whole different ballgame than the balance today.
Well, let's have that conversation. You say IVF, having a child at 40, being an older mom, having your career already established by that point. So when you look back and you see other women kind of wondering, because at the end of the day, we do kind of have to make a choice in our 30s, right? Career focus,
well,
or family focus.
Well, you can figure it out. We shouldn't negate, like, of course.
If you have...
You can figure it out, but like, ideally... But
overall, listen, unless you've been through it, it's hard for you to understand. But you do have to make the choice. You have to make the choice if you have the opportunity or the option to start a family or the option to be in your dream job. It's very, very hard, not impossible, to do both at the same time and be nailing both at the same time.
Oh, well, nailing both at the same time.
So what's your stance on like a woman who's 32 saying, which path do I go down right now? All in on career or all in on kids? Because it's a lot harder to have a kid at 40.
You mean physiologically?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what do I tell people? I tell people, well, everybody has to do what's best for them. But if you are in a position, whether it's that you just decide you want to have a kid, or you're married, or you're in a relationship, or you're in a partnership, or whatever, and you're there in terms of wanting to start the family, I would say, just based on how hard it was for me to get pregnant, I say don't wait, because there is something that is just practical and a reality about, as much equity and as much as we've fought to get equal rights and all of that, as women, our bodies are our bodies, and we're born with a certain number of eggs, and the eggs last as long as they last. And then that's it. And until somebody finds some scientific way for our bodies not to be our bodies,
it's in the works.
Well, they have. I mean, they have found a way. Like, if not for science, I wouldn't be a mom. Full stop.
Yeah.
And, but even more aggressively, it's a long way of saying everybody needs to do what's good for them. But if you feel there's no good time to have a baby, even though I just got through saying I was in a good place and everything, you can figure it out, especially if you have a good partner, especially if you have, it does take a village. My parents are local. My son has a nanny. I have an incredible co-parenting partnership with my son's father. And it's still not always easy, but you have to have cushion to do it. And you're always going to need to do that. And there are times, I think you were saying, like, there are times it's almost like you put your foot on the gas and then you let go. There are times when the gas is your work, and the other times when the neutral is your family. And every day sometimes is different depending on what the push and the pull of that day is. Every year, every age that your kid is different. And for me, what was hardest for me to convince myself of is not to be too hard on myself.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is so hard.
We encourage our listeners and our friends. We have an open conversation all the time about get the information when you're 30. Take a blood test. There are so many ways for you to have a better understanding of what is happening there. Because sometimes by the time you're like, oh, I'm 35, now I'm ready, you don't realize that your uterus is tipped or you don't really have enough eggs or whatever it is. And
it's hard.
It's really...
But it's unfortunately, healthcare doesn't cover anything when it comes to IVF. And so not most people don't have $15,000 sitting around to freeze their eggs.
But there are ways now. There are so many new companies now that have like really amazing payment plans. And
no, Sarah, it's incredibly expensive.
It is expensive. I'll tell you, I was having, I just started an occasional series where I spend an hour with somebody who was in the spotlight and just talk to them about other stuff. The first one was with AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And we had this conversation about, cause she's 31 or something like that. And like, she's got a partner, but are you ready? And she's like, I don't know if I'm ready. And she's having these mm-hmm. thoughts, and she's got an entire staff, you know, and she makes,
you're like, freeze your eggs.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly the conversation we had. And it was, are you going to freeze your eggs? And she said she was thinking about it. She realizes that she has pretty good health care because she's got government health care. But even that, it's expensive. People don't always have access to that.
And the only health care that really covers IVF that I'm aware of is if you work for one of these modern tech companies Facebook or Google or
they
Netflix.
They pay for it, right?
They cover it. Yeah. But what people who haven't done it before really don't realize is that
more than once.
You think you just need to do it once. That is just... You are very lucky if you do it one time and it all goes right. It takes several times for most people. Of course, you can get lucky, but it's not an easy road to go down.
It's not. It's not. It's emotionally tolling. It's physically tolling. But we're talking about the financial part of it right now. I mean, I work for a giant company, and that has had various parent companies along the way of my 3 decades here. And we have really good healthcare. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without that healthcare plan. And we also, so that's IVF. I was, the ship had way sailed on freezing my eggs, but you talk about the conversations that I have with people. It's not just with young people who are with their partners. I'm with you guys. I've said point blank to people who I have a close enough relationship with, young women, we have coverage here, or at least a good amount of it. Go do it, because you don't know what's going to happen. Go freeze your eggs. You have the luxury of working for a company that allows you, or that gives you financial support to do it, because you don't know.
Absolutely. I wish women would have, I think women are starting to talk about it more and having more transparency around the conversation, but my doctor told me, I was there, and she said, egg donors and IVF, it's like the most kept secret in Hollywood. And I respect so much the people that come out and they talk about it because they normalize it. And it needs to be normalized because so many people struggle.
I am super open about it.
Yeah, I love that.
Super open about it for that reason. Yeah. Because I know that there are younger women who can benefit from my lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you're open about
that. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Oh my God, you're so fascinating.
I know.
I love it. And you are so open for somebody who is, I would imagine, held to a certain, you know, standard. But you're very open.
We both really appreciate you being so candid and open as a woman and as a journalist, as a public figure, because these things are really helpful for other women to have someone like you be the face of that.
Well, thank you. And I really don't like talking about myself in particular, but what I do like talking about are issues that women can relate to on so many levels, whether it is getting pregnant, whether it is freezing your eggs, whether it is navigating the workplace, navigating friendships. I also have an amazing group because you guys, I know you've had your best friends on the podcast and you talk about this all the time with your friendship expert. I have a real squad. Like, I really have fantastic friends, some of whom are in this business and some of whom I call civilians, you know, like normal people who I don't have real sisters, but they are like my sisters.
We say civilians too, but it means when you're not a celebrity.
No, but you really, I just want to say, like, you really encompass sort of all the things when I think I have two daughters. Like, you really encompass all the things when I think about speaking to them about, you know, helping them sort of mold who they are. It's like you're someone who was not an overnight success, right? We're living in a time now where overnight success is attainable, and it's attainable for a lot of people. And it's like become the norm now, right? You're someone who worked your ass off in the same company. I love that you were in the same company. I can't imagine all the other offers you got. You're like, no, I'm going to stay. This is where I am. I'm going to get to where I want to be in the same place. I love that.
Because now it's like, let's hire this girl because she has 2 million yes, followers on whatever. Instagram.
No, it's crazy. I love that you champion the younger crop of girls coming up. I love that.
Onyx and Rose. So Erin and I are huge, huge, huge believers in CBD. I would say we're actually pioneers in CBD.
Are you sure about that?
Well, our mom was introducing us to CBD like 20 years ago.
So maybe mom was a pioneer? I don't know why you're trying to take credit for it. You didn't do anything. You barely returned her phone calls.
Oh, we love CBD so much, and we love finding CBD products.
So Onyx and Rose has amazing CBD oils and balms and gummies. I recently used one of their CBD oil tinctures in the sugar cookie flavor during a manicure. I was like, hey, instead of using that random lotion and I don't know what's in it, please use this CBD oil. And it was so nice. And it smelled amazing. And the woman took a picture of it and was like, I'm going to start using this all the time.
I used the, recently the overnight sleep mask. And listen, CBD oil is just healing and building and all those things. My skin felt plump. It felt like my pores were tight.
Onyx and Rose is just a great company. Their products are really clean. All of them are non-psychoactive. So you can experience their therapeutic benefits of CBD without any of the side effects. And it's just an amazing skincare line. So trust us, Onyx and Rose will be the highlight of your daily routine.
I also say, you guys, when you have muscle pains, when you have a headache, CBD helps with that.
So we have an awesome deal to get you started. 20% off your first purchase. Go to onyxandrose.com/foster and use the promo code FOSTER. This deal is not available anywhere else. Get 20% off with the promo code FOSTER. That is only at onyxandrose.com/foster.
I don't know about you, but I loathe when my body temperature is not where I want it to be. If I'm too hot, I'm like I'm a mess. If I'm too cold, I'm like exhausted. I really have to have my body at the ideal temperature, and it's really awful when it's not. So we love Emberwave. Emberwave is a very cool.
Really? So very cool idea. A lot of women I know, you know, hot flashes are synonymous with menopause, but that's not right. If we're being honest with ourselves, women have hot flashes in the night around our cycles. They're very hormonal. It doesn't just mean you're menopausal. So basically, to explain what Emberwave is it's a bracelet that you wear that can cool your body or heat up your body based on your needs and your wants. And I think the most interesting thing about it is when you're sleeping in a bed with someone who prefers a different temperature than you, like Simon and I have temperature wars. You know, he wants the house to be an igloo and I get freezing cold. And when he gets out of the shower, he like can't cool himself down. It's very annoying.
So it's like holding an ice cube to your wrist, right? It gives you that sort of sensation, or like putting your hand around like a warm, like, you know, a warm drink or a cold drink. Like soaking in a hot bath, being in a sauna, like when you stick one foot out of the covers to become a little cooler, that all happens through the Emberwave bracelet on your wrist.
So you can try Emberwave risk-free for 30 days. Ember is offering our listeners $50 off. To get this limited time offer, go to emberwave.com/foster. And the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That is $50 off your first order today. Go to emberwave.com/foster.
Can I just say, great Chris holiday gift. Great holiday gift. Give it to your husband. Give it to your boyfriend. Give it to your girlfriend. Throw it in the stocking. You know, 8 nights of Hanukkah, a lot of presents. That's 8 nights of gifts. Great gift for one night.
I am very fascinated to hear about your working relationship coexisting with your ex-husband, John King, and also when you were married working together. Like, how interesting was that dynamic?
Interesting is a really good word. What I always tell people is that, so we have a son together who's 10. And I was actually thinking about this the other day. I probably spend more time with him all told than any other human on the planet, except for my son. Actually, probably even more than my son, because we have the work and the co-parenting thing. And we probably spend more time together at baseball games. My son is a baseball nut and he's on a travel team now. So that means like all of my weekends when I'm not working, I am at the baseball field, which is great because he loves it. And it was the greatest thing in the world, especially during COVID. But so we spend a lot of time together. And at the beginning, we got separated when Jonah, my son, was like 4 months old.
Oh,
it was
really, wow. That's a really tough time.
You guys know, being a mom, at least one of you knows, yeah. Being a mom of a, but you also are an
aunt.
We're
both moms.
You're both moms.
Yeah.
I'm like the bonus mom, like the stepmom, but the aunt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but you know what it's like to, you know, be postpartum and all that. So that was a wild ride. But, you know, I made a concerted effort, and we both did, to be fair to him, to put all of our garbage aside and to focus on him. And I know from people I know, from colleagues, from friends, that doesn't always happen. I know you guys are children of divorce, and mm-hmm. it's really tough when the parents don't put the kid first. And I'm not a child of divorce. My parents have been married for like 53 years. I don't know from this. So it was a thing that I had to kind of feel my way on. But
I believe there's a way to do it right, and there's a way to fuck up your kids forever. And truly, but there is a way to do it right. I know so many families who divorce the right way, and it takes a lot of work, and you got to put all the ego aside and all those things, but there is a way to do it right. Our parents did not do it right, unfortunately, but it sounds like you guys are doing it right.
We're trying. And listen, one of the blessings of this is, and this is very common now in today's society, is we have like a big modern family. We have, for example, this past weekend on Sunday, I mentioned baseball. I got there and John was there with his first wife, her boyfriend, my boyfriend who lives where you guys live in LA, my dad, my parents are local now. My dad was there and we were all on the sidelines rooting for Jonah, for
my
son. But
what a gift you give your kid by doing that. I mean, there's nothing better than a child feeling like he can still feel safe while his parents are no longer together. Because that's really all a kid wants to feel. They want to feel like they know who the adults are in the room, that everyone is pulling their shit together in front of them, and that everyone can get along in front of the kid and they are safe. And it's like, if you can embrace and have more people in your child's life to love them and to support them, it can be a blessing. Not everyone's meant to end up together. I don't think divorce is always a failure. Sometimes you look at each other and you go, turns out we're not a match and it's nobody's fault and we're just not meant to be together and we still have to make this work. And I commend you guys for that.
Well, I have to say, I promise I won't turn the tables too much because that is my DNA.
Do it.
As you're talking, I'm thinking I am talking to two people who are part of the most famous modern extended family like in the world, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you, the Fosters, the Kardashians, mm-hmm. the Jenners, the mm-hmm. Hadids. Who am I missing here?
It's actually, when you say it like that, it's like, what the... Mm-hmm. I really wish our bank accounts reflected all those names. we really missed out. But I do want to talk about that, and we should talk about that. But I just have to say, it's so interesting to me that your point of reference when, you know, or your example is the baseball game. Mm-hmm. Because my most vivid memory are the soccer games. And the soccer games where my parents were on opposite sides of the field. So like one parent was on our team and then the other parent was on the other. And I see that now with, you know, because I'm older now and I have a lot of my friends are divorced. And that's always a really interesting, like, I don't know. It's very poignant, that example, because
a kid wants to look up and see both their parents together. A kid wants to look up
and see both their parents on the same side, even if they can't stand each other or what's actually going on behind
closed doors. Literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively.
You guys make me wish I had a sister so badly.
You can have Sarah anytime. Would love to hand her off.
You and I look more alike. I'll go with you. Let's do
this. Oh my God. Thank you. That's the nicest thing anybody has ever said
Dana,
to me.
Dana, take my place.
Get me to CNN. I'd love to be there.
No. I don't think you're getting offered a job at CNN. She would leave CNN and come be on the podcast with you.
Mm-hmm. CNN doesn't want me.
So in our winding down here and wrapping up.
Are we winding down?
Yeah, because that's it. That's our time, an hour and a half.
What the hell? We haven't even gotten to one question. We have so many questions.
If you look, we actually
I didn't even look at my thing. Not once.
Well, the only question on there that I wanted to ask, and I don't want to be opening up a can of worms of such a long answer, but is when you mention your big group of friends that you have that are really tight, that are really supportive. I just want to understand from you sort of how you navigate having friends who have different political beliefs than you and how you tackle that. Cause it's such
Aaron asking for a friend.
No, I'm very open about the fact that it really is hard for me. Like I really struggle. Cause it's not like we said, it's not 20 years ago where
you have
it was
a hard
less,
time separating.
It was less polarizing. It's hard for me to feel like a person who supports Trump has the kind of morals of that I can be friends with. It's hard for me. I'm not saying I'm right to feel that way. I'm just saying it's a challenge. So how do you handle that?
It is hard. Don't talk about it.
Don't.
I know. That's
I agree, Dana. I agree.
I feel like if you have a friend for me, if I have a friend who I just love for a million reasons and have loved pre-Trump, pre-Bush, pre-whatever, you know, or just completely separate from the political atmosphere that we're in, then love the friend for that. Now, if that friend, God forbid, would like, you know, put your health at risk because of the whole ridiculous way that the vaccination debate has gotten political, that's a different story. But generally speaking, you know, if you feel strongly about that friend for all the things and all the reasons, can you do that with your friends?
Well, but it's harder now because you and your friends follow each other on Instagram, right? So if you have a friend who's like posting a ton of misinformation about vaccines
that's different. That's a whole different ballgame. Is that what your friends are doing?
No, I'm saying, you know, there's a lot of hot topics that go on that happen in the world right now. There's a lot of hot topics where there's very clearly like a one side or the other. It's like pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine, pro-Israel, pro-Palestine, pro-choice, pro-life. There's all these areas where it's very pro-Trump, anti-Trump, right? There's a lot of areas where you can go like, oh shit, this person feels that way. I feel that way. And people are very passionate about their side. And now, like you say, don't talk about it, which is ideal. But now people are making their opinions clear, which is their right.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. I mean, I don't have a really clear answer other than as much as you can ignore it, unless it's about health and safety and wellness. And that's a whole different.
Right. So for you, the vaccine thing is sort of like where you draw the line of.
There are people who are vaccine hesitant because they have real genuine questions. And I completely respect that. I have questions about the vaccine, but if you're not trying to get those questions answered from real scientists or real legitimate sources, and you're kind of just trying to hear what you think you want to hear, if you don't really want to get a vaccine, so you seek out the people who are full of shit, frankly, then that's where I kind of draw the line. But right. If you have real questions, because it is very confusing and it's very new, you know.
But you know what? We're living.
Find the answers.
In a culture where you're not really allowed to ask. You're really not. Like you are shamed for asking. And that's tough.
No, that's not okay.
And by the way, that applies to all the categories that I was just mentioning, which are just a handful of so many. It sucks because like you should be able to have friendships and disagree about things or find your way to the middle and say like, these are the, like I said before, where you don't fall on party lines. You really just look at each issue and say, I believe this part, but I don't believe that part. This works for me, but that doesn't work for me. And that person needs a place in the country right now.
Absolutely. I mean, vaccines, I see a bit differently in that you can believe in, you can be pro-Trump, you can be anti-Trump, and for the most part, or I don't know, something else, I can't think of another example right now, but you can have a political stance that for the most part, you can be your own and it's your decision and it's your right. But with a vaccine and with a pandemic and a virus, it's a societal issue. It's a decision. Am I part of a society in which I am going to care about the health of the stranger that I see or meet in the grocery store? I mean, this is what my ex, you know, tumbled out of his mouth.
That was a
John King last week, and he didn't. Lauren Protapis, our publicist, called and was like, "Did you know that John has MS?" I was like, "How'd you know that?" And she said, "He just said it on television." I said, "What?" Because I just missed it.
Oh wow!
He had it for 13. He was diagnosed right after we were married. He had it for 13 years, and he was very private. And it tumbled out of his mouth because he was so upset about what we were just talking about, that he's immunocompromised, and there are people who are intentionally lying and about the efficacy of the vaccine and about the need for the vaccine or what it does and doesn't do to you, knowing better. People on another network knowing better. Many of them are vaccinated themselves, but they're doing it because they know that it gins up their viewership and it's reprehensible.
Stokes the fire. But by the way, that moment I feel like humanized him to really endeared. So because for a lot of us, you guys are just, you're these really informed, really well-spoken, larger-than-life people who we look at to just tell us, like, what's happening? What should we believe? And in that moment, like, you know, it really humanized him. I think people sort of, like, really fell in love with him in that moment.
And I've hopefully brought home what I'm trying to explain and not doing it in a very articulate way, which is that when it comes to the pandemic and vaccines, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And you never know if it's an anchor you're watching or, you know, somebody sitting next to you at a restaurant, how much protection they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that I'd like to know from you, what are you excited about? I know that's a big question, but like,
such a broad question.
I know it is a broad question.
That's really a shitty question to put on someone. So like,
no. But what are you excited about in your work life? Like, what are you excited about? Like, what are things you can tell our audience?
That's more specific.
What are things you can tell our audience to, like, where can they find you? They obviously know where to find you, but like,
no, that's a good question. So I'm excited about is that I do State of the Union on Sundays where I do the intense questioning that we talked about. But I also have an occasional series. I talked about AOC and I've got others coming up where I can really have conversations with people and to me and make the sort of one-dimensional, sometimes two-dimensional politician or person in culture multidimensional and explain who they are and just have fascinating conversations with them. This is definitely not like an uplifting rah-rah, but it's important. I have a documentary coming out about voting rights and talk to people in Texas, Arizona, and Georgia, and just experts more broadly about the importance of the changes that are going on. So that's really exciting. And what else do I have coming up? We have an election coming up. I'm not sure when this is dropping, but we have an election coming up in Virginia and New Jersey that could tell us about what's going to happen next year. I mean, I'm such a creature of the election cycle, so I'm always like excited for the next election to see what it means and to see what's going on. Just in my life, I'm always excited for the next day. I was just looking at my phone. I don't know if you guys do this. You know, it pops up like this day in whatever year. And these videos, so my son is 10 now, these videos pop up from when he was like 2 and 3. And I'm like, where is that person?
Crazy.
But I love this person and I'm so excited for the next thing.
We do want to wrap this up and say thank you to you for coming on, being so open and so gracious and giving us your time and presence and teaching us to listen more and giving us some hot takes, which I appreciated.
I'm so grateful. This has been so much fun. I'm big, big fans of yours. I think the first time I really, well, you have your not reality show, but I loved, my favorite thing that you guys did was Sibling Revelry.
Oh, that's so nice.
That is
until
so
you
nice.
Got your own podcast. You know,
that was really great.
That was really great.
It was really fun. Dan, it was so nice to meet you. Have a great rest of your day. And thank you so much
for having me. I really am honored to be here. I really mean that.
Well, we were honored to have you.
Thank you, Dana.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you like this podcast, leave a rating and review.
This podcast is executive produced by...
Can you not use that voice?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to sound...
Yeah, but you don't need to make it sexy.
This podcast is executive produced by...
Do you have a normal voice?
Yeah. Aaron Foster, Sarah Foster, and Allison Bresnick.
Okay, I'll take over. Our associate producer is Montana McBierney. See? Our audio engineer is Josh Windisch. This show is hosted by Simplecast.
See, that didn't sound nice.
That sounded great.